Hi, friends. My name is Vanessa, and welcome back to Unfiltered Noggin. On today's episode, I'll be covering the notorious case, the Hello Kitty murder. The story takes place in Hong Kong in May of 1999, and it all starts with when a 14-year-old that goes by the name Ah Fong walks into one of the Hong Kong police stations. And she tells the cops straight off the bat that I'm being haunted by a ghost for weeks now. And at first, the police thought she was on something because what do you mean you're being haunted by a ghost? And first of all, why are you coming to us? You know we don't deal with paranormal activity. But they listened to her because she was giving a statement and it's protocol. And as they were listening to her explaining how she was being haunted, Ah Fong says, I'm being haunted by this young woman. She's in her 20s and she has blood all over her. And I think she's haunting me because I took part in the abusing and the murder of this young woman for a month. And she's haunting me, like she's coming back to haunt me for my involvement. And the only way I believe she will leave me alone is if I confess to the cops, you guys. And the cops were immediately alarmed for two reasons. Because one, she was being haunted by this ghost young woman. And secondly, she might be involved in a possible murder case. So they followed Ah Fong to this apartment building in Kowloon, Hong Kong. And Kowloon is basically a city in Hong Kong. It's a rundown neighborhood. Well, the neighborhood that... So just a rundown city, you know, lots of poverty, and it's a shopping district as well. And nothing could have prepared them for what they were about to enter to. The scent of rotting human flesh assaulted their nostrils as soon as they stepped into that residence. As they continued to explore the flat, they stumbled upon this Hello Kitty doll, this giant Hello Kitty doll. But it wasn't the original Hello Kitty that I pictured in my head. You know, like the small, cute little Hello Kitty doll. But instead, it was a Hello Kitty with a mermaid, blue turquoise tail on the bottom half. And Ah Fong couldn't stop staring at this Hello Kitty. So the officers, they put on their gloves to not tamper with possible evidence. And they cut open the doll thinking they were going to find, you know, stuff, white fluff that you find in other dolls. But no, they found a human skull that was sewed into the doll. The victim was 23-year-old Fan Man Yi, a woman who worked as a hostess at a nightclub. When Fan was just a child, her parents disowned her and Fan was actually sent away to live in a orphanage for girls. And in order to cope with her pain and her parents disowning her, getting kicked out of the orphanage at a young age, like the age of 16 because of overcrowding, and apparently she was at the age to fiend for herself, Fan turned to drugs. And a lot of people tend to turn to drugs to numb their pain. Anyway, she turned to drugs, like heavy drugs like crystal meth, and in order to keep fueling her addiction, she needed money, so she became a prostitute. At this point in her life, it's safe to say she had it tough growing up. In 1996, Fan married a man named Shi Yun, and together they had a son. And Fan really wanted to start her journey, you know, she wanted to change as a new mother. She didn't want her son to see her as this drug addict mother that is addicted to meth. She wanted to change, which is acceptable, which is great. But the problem was Shi Yun, her husband. Shi Yun was also a drug addict. And when you have someone you love around you all the time doing illegal drugs, and you're a drug addict trying to recover, it's just hard. And in fact, it was hard for her to not go back to her old ways. So Fan divorced Shi Yun and decided to take their son along with her. So at this point, she's a single mother and she's taking care of her only child, her son. In 1997, Fan met a man named Chen Menluk. And Chen Menluk was a 34-year-old triad member and a notorious drug dealer. And some of you might have watched Rush Hour with Jackie Chan and heard of the name The Triads throughout the three-part movie series. It's basically like a Chinese mafia notorious crime organization that originated in Greater China. And so he would come into the Romance Villa, which is a local brothel in Kowloon where Fan was known to work as a prostitute. And so he would come in as one of her existing customers and basically ask for long sessions of sex, and they would have many, many, many binges together. Then something horrible occurs. Oh God. One day, Fan woke up during one of their binges together, and she decides she's going to steal Chan's wallets. And this was the worst mistake she ever committed. In the wallet, he had $4,000 Hong Kong dollar HKD, which is like equivalent to $642 Canadian today. It was probably a lot back then. And of course, Chan Menluk found out because it was just them two in their binges together. As a result of Fan stealing his wallet, she was so scared to the point where she refunded him $4,000, in which she stole, with an additional $10,000 on top of the $4,000, basically returning $14,000 Hong Kong dollars that she saved up, that she broke her back left and right, day and night, working as a prostitute. But you would think Chan would take that $14,000 and just say, oh, thank you, whatever, I'll act like none of this happened. No. He said, I'll take the $14,000, but I want $16,000 on top of the $14,000. And then he says, oh, by the way, I want it by this date. And I don't know how long he gave her, but it was clearly not enough for Fan because she didn't have the $16,000. And Chan was mad at this point. So he tells his henchmen, I want you to kidnap Fan and bring her to my apartment, my beautiful 5-bedroom apartment in Kowloon. Boom. So the henchmen, they follow Chan's order. They bring Fan back to his beautiful 5-bedroom apartment in Kowloon. And she was shook because she didn't have what he asked for, the $16,000. And so she starts telling Chan, look, I just need a few more days and I'll have the money. Please, please, please extend your timeline. And he says, no, because you don't have to worry about that anymore. See, what I'm going to make you do is you're going to offer your sexual services to my friends and associates from the triad, and then you'll have my money in no time. So just don't worry about it. And that was the idea at first, the plan at first, until the three men, you know, they became high on crystal meth. And it was at this point the plan was abandoned. And one of the guys you see, they decided, why don't we have fun while we're high? And the other two guys were like, okay, so what do you want us to do? Like, what can we do that is so fun that you're thinking of? And that one guy said, why don't we beat Fan up? Nothing like murdering her, just torturing her for a few hours. And so they all agreed and they beat Fan for hours and hours and hours into the night. Until they're like, wait a second, we can't pimp her out like this. Like, she's badly bruised, she looks messed up at this point, and people might call the cops. We just can't risk it. And Chan was like, oh, so I can't get my $16,000? Therefore, we're just going to keep her here, and we're going to continue on with this inhumane torture. And for the next month of Fan's life, she was living in hell. I'm talking about they were brutally beating her. She was raped. They would tie her wrist with electrical wires, hang her from the ceiling, and then continue to beat her with household objects like kitchen utensils. And allegedly, Chan and his henchmen would beat her with furniture and table legs. Whatever that means. I mean, like, who has, I guess they had a lot of time on their hands to unscrew the table legs and then hit her with it, and then just to screw it back on. That's so backbreaking, but I mean, they did. She was burnt with McDonald's plastic straws. Like, they would melt the plastic with the lighter and then they would just let the melted plastic drip on her skin. And then when she was all blistered up, they would cause her more pain by rubbing chili oil on her blistered body parts. She was even forced to drink and digest urine and poop. And this was happening for a month straight now. Like, a month. A whole month. 30 days. Morning comes around and Ah Fong woke up first. She walks over to Fan and she realizes that Fan is not moving and she's cold and she's pale. She immediately starts yelling, "Chan, Chan, Chan, oh my god, she's not moving, she's not breathing, she's cold, she's pale, what is going on?" And Chan walks over like it's completely normal, like people just die all the time, it is what it is, get over it. And so he walks over to where Fan and Ah Fong was, and he says, "Well, you see what happened, this is why you're seeing her like this, let me tell you why. Well, I actually saw her overdose on meth, and that's why she's dead. She's not moving." And Ah Fong, you know, she calmed down a bit. The guys were like, "Well, Fan's dead. What now? What can we do?" And so they decide as a group, let's dispose. What is it? Dispose? Yeah, I think it's dispose. Dispose Fan's body in the bathtub. And so before they put her body in the bathtub, Chan told his men, "Go get me my saw, that wooden saw that we have." And they just, when they got the saw, they just continued to cut Fan's body parts into pieces in the bathtub. So basically dismember her. And as soon as they were all finished dismembering her, a new problem arose. The fluid, the smell of this orange fluid was oozing from her body that was starting to actually spread quickly throughout the apartment. And Chan and his men, they couldn't risk the neighbors even smelling this nuisance scent. And so they were sitting in the kitchen trying to come up with a plan when one of the guys were like, "Oh my God, why don't we take her small body parts that we cut with the saw and boil it to stop the decomposition of the body?" And so they started boiling her body parts for days and days and days. They would also put her heart intestines and their like her lungs in baggies, like plastic baggies, and they would just throw it in the freezer because they really couldn't necessarily just cook the bigger pieces like they were cooking the smaller body pieces. And at this point, all they had left was the head, Fan's head. That's all they had left. And since it's so hard to dispose a human skull, like, you can't just throw it in the dumpster and it's like expecting nothing to come back to you, they decided, it was at this point, they decided that, you know, why don't we conceal the human head, the human skull, somewhere where nobody would look? And what was the best idea for them? To hide it, to sew it into the Hello Kitty mermaid doll. And when they did that, Chan demanded Ah Fong to take that doll home. So Ah Fong, she took it to her apartment where she lives, where she stays at. And that's when all the haunting and the nightmares begun. And that's when Ah Fong went to the cops to confess. So now we're kind of like traveling back in time to where the cops were, right where Ah Fong guides them. Like, guides the officers, the cops, to Chan's apartment in Kowloon, and they walked into the flat with the smell, the scent hits them, hits their nostrils, and that's when they see this creepy Hello Kitty mermaid and they decided to open it up and they discover a human skull sewed into the doll. Trial comes around. So trial comes around. During the trial, 34-year-old Chen Maluk and his two henchmen that go by the name of Chiang Cho, who was 27, and 23-year-old Wei Lei Lun. I'm probably saying these names wrong, but I don't even care at this point. They were charged with manslaughter, and they were all sentenced to life in prison in December 2000, with the chance of parole in 20 years, which means last year, 2020, they had the chance of parole, of getting parole. So what happened to Ah Fong? Ah Fong was offered, the judge offered her immunity and protection because she was underage at the time, and that's what everything came down to, the fact that she was underage. And many people were upset by this, but it is what it is. This woman, well, she's a woman now. She's a free woman. She's discharged. She was released. She never stepped foot in jail. It's like a plea deal without sentencing, right? She gave so many evidence to the police. It is what it is. She's out. That's what it is. Final thoughts. The case is just sad, and it was horrific and kind of pissed me off. And all I can think about is Fan's son who's growing up without a mother, the closure. There's nothing to have closure with when there's no body. The police couldn't have a, they couldn't find a body, which means, and this is the main reason why the three men were charged with manslaughter and not murder, because there was no evidence. Because they dismembered the body. And they boiled the body. They got rid of the body. There's no evidence. They left nothing behind but that human skull and a few plastic baggies of her heart and her lungs and her her intestines, which was in the freezer. Like, they found a few of her body parts, but they really couldn't, you know. It's not like it's a full, her full body was there. Maybe they would have been charged with murder if her full body was never dismembered, disposed, gone. And what I also found fascinating was after time passed by, people in Hong Kong would actually travel down to the residence in Kowloon where Chan lived, and they would try to communicate with Fan's remaining spirits to find out why she's tormenting Ah Fong. And I mean, it's intriguing because it kind of reminds me of, you know, those YouTubers that would go to, I stayed in the most haunted room in the Biltmore Hotel, or I stayed in the most haunted room on the Queen Mary ship. It's just intriguing, but at the same point, it's kind of like disrespectful, since, you know, Fan, she does have a son that is still alive. I don't know, it's just kind of disrespectful to me. Maybe they didn't mean it like that, but who knows. And since nobody wanted to live in a building where someone had tragically died, the structure was demolished in 2012 and it was converted into a fresh new beautiful hotel in 2016. Which reminds me of what happened to the Cecil Hotel, also known as Stay on Main, after the death of Elisa Lam. So, like, they basically changed the hotel name, the hotel, you know, and refurnished it, basically. And that's what happened to this building, the structure. It was turned into a hotel, you know, because of the past. Yeah, like, people can search up the past of this building. And so they changed it. And this case had so many plot twists and turns that I don't even know how to feel. Let me know what you guys think about this case. And if you guys enjoy episodes like this, make sure you turn on your notifications and hit that follow button. And I'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye.